It's time for From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine with Krayshap. A golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around, trying to put it in a 4 1/4-inch diameter hole. From the Shortgrass is presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine and brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. And now, from the Shortgrass, here's your host, Krayshap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I'm your host, Krayshap. Coming up on this edition of From the Shortgrass, it is my first part of a two-part episode with Sean S.J. Toohey. S.J. grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and in fact, his early life was depicted as part of the feature film The Blind Side, in which he was portrayed by child actor Jay Head. S.J. played 4 years of college basketball as a guard at Loyola University in Maryland. He graduated from Loyola, transferred to Southern Methodist University, where he played 1 year of college football, and then he started his career to become an athletic director. He was the director of football operations at Arkansas. He was an assistant AD at Liberty, an associate AD at UCF. And then when the NIL era started, he became the executive director of the Kingdom there at UCF in Orlando before moving to Oral Roberts in Tulsa and becoming a deputy athletic director. Last year, he was named athletic director at Louisiana Monroe. S.J. Toohey coming up after the break. Stay with us.
Hello, this is Justin Akre. When joint pain or an injury slows you down, turn to UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Arkansas's largest orthopedic team and the state's most fellowship-trained surgeons offer expert care for sports injuries and problems affecting the hip, knee, shoulder, spine, hand, foot, ankle, and more. Care is easy to access at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital and the new location on Rodney Parham in Little Rock next to UAMS Health Urology Center. For walk-in care, choose UAMS Ortho now. Call 501-686-TOSH. When you think ortho, think UAMS.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am your host, Krayshap. S.J. Toohey, born to Leanne and Sean Toohey. He played 4 years of college basketball as a guard at Loyola University in Maryland before playing 1 year of football at SMU, and then he started his athletic career. He was a special teams assistant in 2017 at SMU, and then he became the assistant director of football operations at the University of Arkansas, followed by athletic appointments at Liberty, UCF. He was the head of the Kingdom, the NIL Collective for the University of Central Florida from 2003 to 2024, and then he was a deputy athletic director at Oral Roberts University in Tulsa. He was named athletic director at the University of Louisiana Monroe on November the 28th of 2025. He loves to play the game of golf, and he loves to compete. When you talk about competing, S.J. Toohey is right there. How did he get the name S.J.? I'll let him tell you. It's coming up right now. On the tee, Sean S.J. Toohey.
S.J., thanks for joining me on this edition of From the Shortgrass. Do you remember the first time you ever picked up a golf club and fell in love with the game?
I remember being about 7 years old, and my dad put me in summer golf camp, all right, at the local little spot in Memphis there. And I think it was, now I realize it was a babysitting situation for sure.
Right.
Okay, he didn't want me to learn to play golf. And, man, I was all in. Like, it's great. I loved it, loved it. And the next year, I'm like, Dad, summer golf camp. Right? I was like, now's a one-time thing. No, now we're doing like basketball, baseball. I was like, but I just wanted you to not embarrass yourself on a golf course. And man, as a kid, I liked to go out with him and mess around. But I didn't play. When I got into college, we had a good group of guys, and we go and we hack it up. But college is where I started to play a bunch. There was a good little public course in Baltimore, and we had four or five guys that was a great little getaway from basketball when I played. And I'd say I didn't get good at golf, though. I say good, relative, not good to you, relative to a normal person, until working for Hugh Freeze at Liberty. If you couldn't golf working for him, then, you know, you weren't going to talk to him. It was no, you know, that's the best FaceTime we got on the golf course.
That's like Saban's lunchtime basketball pickup games.
Yeah.
Hugh Freeze, we're going to go get nine in after work today.
I'm telling you, we'd build a schedule. I mean, and there are a lot of different ways to win in college football. And I know people got, you know, upset. Coach Freeze worked. He would get in there early in the morning, and this is what I got to do today. And when I finish that, I'm going to play golf. And it may take 4 hours. It may take 12, but he'll get it in.
I think it's so funny because at the spring meetings, back when Spurrier was in the league, Hugh Freeze was in the SEC, Gus Malzahn, and Coach Stoops at Kentucky,
yep.
They would go play right before the meeting started on that Tuesday morning. They'd probably play 18 holes in like 2 hours.
Isn't that where I met you?
That's where you didn't meet me there, but that's where we played.
I remember getting the text from I guess Chad Morris was working for the time, and I didn't know Coach Malzahn. I ended up working for him for 4 years, but at the time I didn't know him. He said, "Hey, we're gonna go play with Gus before meetings tomorrow. Are you in?" And I was like, "Well, meeting started at like 9:30, whatever it was."
He's like, "Yeah, 10:30,
we're gonna play
yeah.
before we teed off at 7 or whatever it was, and we finished." But yeah, I forgot. Gosh, I forgot about that.
Was that your first time playing with Gus Malzahn?
That was my second time ever meeting Coach Malzahn.
What was that like?
Obviously, working at Arkansas, being a college football fan in general, right? I mean, you know Gus, but then you get to Arkansas, and for whatever, better or for worse, like Gus is involved in Northwest Arkansas in terms of Razorbacks. Now, outside of Arkansas, he's involved in a ton of predominantly positive ways, and I think he was very positive at Arkansas too. Certainly, I'm biased, but you hear about him all the time, right? I mean, working in Fayetteville, Arkansas, you're going to hear about Gus Malzahn. And so I think I kind of built him up, and he is this kind of larger-than-life, you know, ball coach. And I think that spring meeting was after our first year, I want to say, because we lost to him and played him pretty tight. And, of course, you know, Chad had kind of had the recruiting thing going, and we were recruiting against Auburn so much. And I remember you'd be talking to kids, and they'd say, "Well, you know, Gus said this." I'm like, "Oh, crap, man, we're recruiting against Gus Malzahn. Like, you got to be careful." You know, he really is, I think, the last of that kind of bunch. Man, just a true one of the few living legends when they were – wrapping that, like the era you just mentioned with those guys in the SEC, man, you had some real guys. And they still do, but those are some great coaches.
Let's go back real quick. Growing up, golf for 1 year during the summer,
yeah.
And your dad threw you out there more babysitting. I think that's kind of what my parents did as well. That they won't own up to it. They'll say, "No, we want you to go there." I went year after year after year.
Yeah.
So it was easy babysitting in the summer. What other sports, SJ, did you play growing up?
Man, basketball, baseball, football were always kind of my three. And I would go through phases of life where I love one more than the other. I think football is kind of my first. I say that basketball is my first love. And my dad was a college basketball player. And
yeah, at Ole Miss, standout.
Playing it. And they did the thing where, you know, you're not allowed to play football till this age type thing. So for me, that was fifth grade. And when I started football, man, I just like was so all in on football. And, you know, when you're learning the game for the first time, like that was the first time I remember like learning a sport again, you know, like you're learning the plays and all this stuff. And I kind of went back to baseball. Then I fell in love with basketball. Then I fell in love with baseball growing up. That's probably my best sport. If you can't tell from 10 minutes in my office, I'm the most ADD, ADHD person, you know, on the planet. So maybe that's where I fell out with baseball. But so much in any sport, coaches make your experience. And I had some great football and basketball coaches. I didn't have a great baseball coach in high school. I kind of fell out of that where I loved it. So I ended up kind of focusing on basketball at the end, which is where I played in college. And 4 years of basketball, 1 year of football as a walk-on. So I went back to football late. But, you know, I just wanted to play stuff. Man, I love competing. Like, I'm group texting my staff here. Literally right before we walked in, I said, "Who wants to lose in pickleball at 6 p.m. today? You know, be here at the MAC." So if I can compete in anything, I'm in.
You're a competitor.
I want to – well
– where do you get that from? Your dad or your mom?
The dad is the answer. I mean, certainly, because, like, that's what he did. But Leanne wants to win. She wants to win. There's a painting hanging. You won't see it on the podcast. There's a painting hanging behind Trey. It's a print of a live painting we did in an auction about 6 months ago. Actually, it was our first fundraiser here, so 5 months ago. And my mom came to the event. She came into town, and this girl live paints a beautiful P-40 Warhawk plane. And, man, she crushes it. And we start the bidding, man. It's going up. My mom, I'm on stage. She whispers, "Hey, I want that to be in your office. Like, I'm going to support ULM. Like, I'll buy this and put it in your office." I'm like, "Sure." Bidding's going up. It gets to like $4,000. And the girl, Emery, is a she's a stud who painted. I kind of turned to her because we told her we'd give her like 20% of whatever it sold for. I was like, yeah. I said 20, I meant 10%, just so you know. She's like, yeah. It gets, well, one of our biggest donors has now become a big buddy of mine, a guy named Everett Stagg. He also won the painting. I think it's up to $25,000, $30,000. It's $32,000. And I'm yelling at my mom, like, put your paddle down.
$32,000?
Like, put your paddle down. I don't need the paint that bad. And she finally puts her paddle down. Everett wins it. And for her, it became not about the painting. You know, she just wanted to win. Like, I'm going to beat this guy. I don't know who he is, but I'm going to beat him. And I said from stage, I said, Everett, I've been alive for you know, 32 years, and I've never seen my mom lose at an auction at anything she actually wanted. So this is the first for me. So I'll say that my dad, but deep down, Leanne competes.
Yeah, I can tell she competes. And I think a lot of people saw that in the movie The Blind Side, sure. Which, you know, kind of famous for
sure
more than just what you accomplished athletic-wise.
Trust me.
But you were the little boy in the movie The Blind Side. What was that time like for you?
Man, it's an interesting question because that's obviously the first thing people do. And what was it like? And it's twofold. One is when it was happening, I was in, let's say, third, fourth grade. It was like nothing because it was kind of just it happened, right? It was, life worked out that way. And, one day moved to the next, and all of a sudden it was very normal. You know, Mike came in and was there. And, you know, then you fast forward, what was that, 7, 8, 9 years, and I was a freshman in high school. And how the Blind Side came to be is a whole other podcast probably. It's a weird story about Michael Lewis coming to write another book in town and saw Mike and wrote an article became a book. But the book rights sold to be a movie when I was maybe a freshman in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Michael Lewis had written Moneyball, Big Short, Liar's Poker. They'd all been sold to be movies, and none of them had been a movie. I remember vividly him saying, or my dad telling us, like, well, it sold to be a movie. It ain't going to be a movie. Okay, like, this is all these books sell to be movies, whatever. And about a year and a half later, that movie came out. So that was my sophomore year of high school that it came out. I mean, same thing. Like, it was weird. It certainly impacted me in high school. It's a horrible time. 16 years old is a terrible time in life for that to come.
Yes.
Because you immediately make a lot of friends and a lot of enemies. And, like, I didn't deserve either of them, I don't think. Maybe the enemies. And it was just a weird, growing up thing. And then when I left Memphis, I didn't realize the impact it was outside. I was always playing sports. I didn't, like, travel a whole bunch. You know, I played sports year-round in high school.
It's very competitive inside Memphis.
Correct. And again, in Memphis, I thought it was a big deal because we were there, right? I mean, and then all the high schools and rivalries, and Mike played and my sister played. And, you know, then I got to college in Baltimore, and I was like, oh, crap, people actually know this here too. I think that was my freshman year of college. I was like, oh, this is actually outside of our city impact. And it's crazy. It's our kids now at ULM, we got, like, great kids, but it's funny, most of them don't know it anymore, which is, fine.
It's not mandatory viewing down here for the athletes?
No, it is not mandatory viewing. And some of them, they'll find out, obviously, and coach will tell them, or it'll come up, or they'll get them, like, Instagram, and go, well, I got, like, most ADs, what's the deal? But it's been 15, it came out in 2010, it's been 16 years, and so our freshmen were two, when it came out. Or the flip, and when I get on town, or I'm going to speak somewhere, and I go on stage, and it's like just a mass disappointment of like, oh, he's 32. they wanted the little blonde kid to walk out, and it's always a very disappointing thing for some to be like, oh no, he grew up and has like a beard. It's terrible. So it's a good mix, but people that love it is great. I'm happy for him. People that don't, I can appreciate that too. Crap, I've seen it twice, so I'm not far behind him.
I think it's a great movie. I think it's one that really touches you, though. Too, it shows you the value of. Here's a family, took this youngster in, he needed help, and the family gave it to him.
Yeah, it's initially when it first came out, I think it's in the book. I've seen the movie twice, and I read the book maybe once. And I say once, I was in like eighth grade, so I don't even know that I read it. but I think maybe in the book, but you mentioned Coach Saban. The people would always ask me, what did you think The Blind Side was about? And I'd say, well, I think it's about, valuing people. And there was a great story when Nick Saban came to watch Mike play high school basketball, and within 5 minutes he was like, he's gonna be a first round pick. Like, he's an unbelievable athlete. And I always tell people that it doesn't sound crazy because that's Coach Saban, that's what he does, but for 15-16 years people didn't think that was the kid. No one else had this thought that, but you give the right lens to the right person, all of a sudden he is. And again, Mike's easy spot, he's very talented and he's smart and he's athletic, But there's a lot of people in whatever profession it may be outside that, that I think maybe we misvalue because you don't get in the 5 minutes like the like Saban did with him. So, and I don't want to give credit to Nick, and I don't want to hype up anything. But if anything positive from it, that's what I always tell people is like, you know, sometimes you misvalue people because you don't view them in the right perspective or lens. So I try to be cognizant of that here. You know, when there's a compliance guy or whatever it may be that you go, man, this guy's terrible. Well, okay, maybe he's not. It's just not this thing he should be doing. And it's definitely helped me in that perspective. But look, people hate it for other reasons too. I'm good with those. Trust me, it was cringy for me to watch back, certainly. And I watched it once at the premiere and then once with the girl I was dating in Dallas, Texas when I was at SMU because it was kind of still relevant. And I said, okay, we'll watch it so that people can ask you. You'll know the questions. You know, they ask you, you can answer them. You don't have to feel weird. And we ended up not getting married. So I'm like, never again. I ruined my one good story that I'd only watched it once, and now it's twice. So it's been a while.
So Memphis to Baltimore. Where after Baltimore?
I went Baltimore to SMU.
Okay, to Dallas.
I want to be a college basketball coach.
Really?
And I
kind of play off what your dad did with the way he played at Ole Miss.
Yeah, and you know, my granddad is a very legendary coach in New Orleans. My late granddad at Newman High School, where the Mannings went, and they won like 17 district championships in a row. And the gym there is a Tui gym. And he was it's funny here. I went with my president last week to New Orleans, and she's like, six people like, you know, that's his granddad. Like, which never happens, right, in life. Cause it's always blindside, or maybe it's football, whatever it may be. But she was like, wait, your granddad? I'm like, yeah, she's down New Orleans, from New Orleans.
Maybe the background check could have been a little better.
Yeah. So he was a basketball coach, and obviously my dad worked for the Grizzlies, and I grew up around it. And I had two coaches in college that were both fine guys. The second one, I didn't see eye to eye with as a coach. I thought he was not very good. He's a good guy. It was Tubby Smith's son. And I kind of ended my career on a not good note with him. And I said, man, I don't want to be a basketball coach because I want to treat people differently than this. And I really wanted to, you know, I was a, as we all are, I think, a know-it-all, you know, college athlete. I mean, I can do this. And I wanted to walk on last year. So, well, I'm going to walk on somewhere. I wanted to be the place with the best basketball coach, like that I can learn to be a coach from. And back to my granddad, Larry Brown lived with my granddad on the couch when he was coaching the New Orleans Buccaneers, the ABA team, years ago. And my dad, we reached out to Larry and said, man, can he be a walk-on? You know, he just wants to be a coach. You know, he ain't going to play. Like, he's not one of those into the bench, like, oh, I wish I was in the game. He just wants to learn to be a coach. Well, Chad Morris was at SMU as well, and SMU, he just gotten that job the year before football. Well, Chad and my late grandmother at the time had a condo at the same place in Destin, Florida. So we knew Chad, and my dad calls Chad, and Chad's like, man, maybe we can play football too and walk on here and we'll do all this stuff. And, you know, I was like, well, crap, this is going to be an awesome year. I mean, I learned a lot from these guys, and I got to SMU. I'd been there about a week, and Larry Brown got, you know, fired doing the NIL pre-NIL, or resigned, I should say. And I'm like, well, that sucks. That's kind of part of my plan.
SMU seems to have a history.
Man. Well, now they'd be if they get awards for it.
They're fine with it. Yeah. Right?
And you know, we talked to Chad about it, and said, well, let's just play the football year out. We'll figure out basketball as it comes. And man, I learned more from Chad in that 6 months. And I just loved it. I love football. I hadn't been around it in a long time, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought I was going to go into like private equity and work in sports with this company in Dallas. And Chad said, well, why don't you be a GA? Finish your master's degree. I was about halfway through it, and I said, wow, okay. There was a special teams GA job open, which is the lowest of low of important jobs in football. Like, you know, you got coaches, you got GAs. The special teams GA is like barely an office. You know, you're sitting like outside the building on the laptop. But man,
if you have a laptop.
Correct. Yeah, correct. And you know, I fell in love with it. And I told Chaz, I mean, I think I want to end up being an AD. I'm not in any rush to do that. But if you ever get a job that you think you have a spot for me that would put me on that path, I'm in, like, as long as you want.
So you were done trying to coach. You wanted to be an AD.
Because I really wanted to get in the business side of things at SMU. Because there was Dallas was kind of, I mean, still was obviously booming at the time, and there was a company there called Redbird Capital. Hunter Carpenter, I think you know Hunter.
I know Hunter.
I had breakfast with Hunter one morning. I'm like, man, I want to do what this guy does. I want to work in the business side of sports. And then as I learned more about it, I'm like, well, you know, an AD, you kind of get the best of both a little bit. And so I really wanted to pursue that, and I told Chad, man, I think I want to do this, but I'm not any, like, it could be 20 years. I want to get on a path that does that. And he said, well, stay, do what you're doing, do a good job, and we'll figure it out. Well, you know, I got the Arkansas job, and I bothered him enough to where I was like, you know, if there's ever a job that somewhat aligns with administration. So he got me into operations at Arkansas, which is what started my admin path. So I owe a lot to Chad.
You're one of the ones that, you know, says, hey, I owe a lot to Chad Morris, and there are some fans in the state of Arkansas that just think that was a bad time in Razorback football. Yeah. Do you think it was just luck of the draw that that's kind of the cards you guys were dealt?
Man, that's a like we could do two, three. We could do a whole podcast series. Probably. About the, or a book at Arkansas. One, I love Fayetteville, Arkansas. I love Arkansas. Some of my best friends in the world are still there. I mean, guys like Will Roth and Ben Blakeman who are, you know, will be with me at the beach in a week. I mean, guys I love. I love going back. The coaches were there when I was there. Some of them are still supporting them. I was in Tulsa at ORU for a while. They were great to us. They'd play us and everything. I mean, I support them all. To answer your question the most short way possible, one, we didn't walk into a great situation. And, you know, Chad, those Arkansas would have benefited from, like, the portal and stuff, what it is. You know, you couldn't recruit X amount of players to hit your scholarship numbers. But if you lost players, you lost players. Like, you know, if you lost more than 25, you couldn't bring them in. So we were behind our number for the first year or two. And I think, you know, building the program the way that Chad had done it and wanted to, it was very high school, you know, heavy. And, crap, we signed really good players. And I think the timing of what he needed to get there, he lost a team second year. I mean, there's no one – he wouldn't fight you on that. No one would fight it on that. I don't know how it would have been if he'd have stayed because those guys ended up being really good. You know, Sam, who I love, came in and won with them, and they had some good years with the Ricky Strombergs and Brady Lathams and Traylon Burks and, you know, Trey Knox. I mean, there was, you know, players that were really good. KJ obviously had a couple good years. And I think Chad was – places he had been, you know, from a high school level to – Tulsa to Clemson, to SMU, at all those places they needed him very badly. And when Dabo, you know, kept Dabo's job at Clemson and SMU, I mean, SMU was terrible. And so he would say all these things, just to East Texas, you know, he's from Texas. He'd say this stuff. And I remember, you know, we're playing for him. Like, our only chance at being good is to listen to what this guy says because we stink. And we beat Houston one year. They were number 8 in the country. And before the game, the day before, he said the number one key of the game is to keep your helmet on when the game's over because they're going to tear the goalpost down. It's going to hit us on the head. Like, be very careful. That's our number one key of the game. I mean, this guy's – we're 34-point underdogs. You know, right. We went and beat him.
Right. How in the world is that going to happen?
And we beat him, and that was kind of the moment for us, SMU, where we go, okay, well, if we just believe in – it does work. We never had that game in Arkansas that if you'd have won it, the team goes, oh, okay, I get it. Like, this is the plan. And there was A&M both years, but just the first year, like, that one slipped away big time. Ole Miss and Little Rock, golly, it slipped away big time. Both years, Ole Miss, we had a chance to beat them. Kentucky. I mean, there was LSU at home. There was 6 or 7 games, I think, that if you won that one, you go, okay, all right, we're okay. This makes sense. We can believe in what we're doing. But, you know, that combined with a young team and combined with a lot of seniors who felt like, you know, not our guy type, we just lost team. I don't think if he could go back, I think he could pull different levers to make it have worked better. But not coming to a great situation and just not, you know, the ball bouncing had certainly escalated how – you know, it unraveled, but you know, crap. I always joked that next year, and I really do like Sam a lot. I pull for him. I think he's a really, really good dude. I'm like, well, I know all these guys. Like, you know, he won. Now Sam added some good players too. Sam did a lot, and man, he won the team back over. I mean, that's what they needed at that time. But I could go into a whole diatribe. He just didn't have a good answer. Chad didn't win. Man, loving kids up and holding them accountable and building it didn't work.
Yeah,
and a lot of coaches have a good plan for that. No problem. I'll switch to being this guy. Chad couldn't switch. That's what he was. I'm gonna be hold you strictly accountable to this. I'm gonna love you to death. And those players are like, yeah, great. Well, how do you get me to the NFL? You know, that wasn't them. The seniors and juniors. They were like, yeah. What can you do for me to get me to this? And he's like, oh, I don't know. What about our core pillars of accountability here? So I wish it would have worked. It's a great place to live and work. But man, I learned more from Chad in those 2 years than I do a lot from people who have great years.
SJ, you leave Arkansas. You go to Liberty with Coach Freese. Talked about the playing golf earlier.
A lot of golf.
What were those days like?
A lot of golf at Liberty. Hugh Freese combined with COVID is a lot of golf.
Do you have to know how to play golf to be on his staff?
If you want to progress on the staff. No, Coach wants to win, but he compartmentalized, right? I mean, it was football and golf. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, he was always, you know, on it. But some of our most meaningful interactions and times, I mean, he wanted to play. It mattered to him a lot. And you know, it was fun. I tell you, we had 15, 20 guys on staff that played, and it was great for us. And then Coach Freese, you know, he ain't got advice all the time. He's a head coach. But when he let to play, well, we'll go play. You know, we'd go play. We had young guys that played all the time. And, man, I bet we play 5 times a week up there.
Really?
Again, you know, when we came into that job, it was the off season, so we played a ton. And then COVID happened, and we were never going to have a season or not. And so we'd come in, you know, July, June, July, August, and we'd work for a couple hours, and we'd go play every day. And then fall camp was even slower because it kind of kept progressing out. So we'd work from 7-3 and go play. But we were playing every
Was
day.
It just the staff? How would y'all draw up teams? Did you compete against anything? Because I can imagine that with Coach Freeze, y'all are competing for something.
We had a chief of staff, Derry Marshall. Now Freeze had his guys too, like his country club. And just, you know, Coach Freeze, always, he's a good relationship guy and places he lives. So he had his crew that they'd have games all the time. And then he'd come play with us, we'd have games. But we had a chief of staff named Derry Marshall, and Derry was he was like the games commissioner. He'd go in there, he had a big board in the office, and here's how strokes were predetermined, and it was no debate.
It was drawn up before you got to the first tee.
Oh, my gosh, and Coach Freeze would be somehow playing a four, but he's a one. I mean, but we had a lot of fun up there. And, again, some of the best times were when we knew he was going to go play on the weekend, because then we knew, okay, well, crap. So we had about 12 of us, and we'd go play, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and do three different formats each day. I mean, I'm telling you, we played every day.
Any of the players play?
A lot of the players, we take them out. There's a kid, Brody Brom, he's coming down to Monroe here pretty soon, that was a receiver force there. I take them and the old linemen to play, and man, our coach did a good job taking them. Lynchburg was a good little golf town. There was two country clubs that were both nice, Poplar Grove and, Boonesboro Country Club. And then there was probably four just like, you know, $20 to play, $25 to play courses. That some were nine holes. And so it was accessible. It was affordable. We play all the time. Oh, my gosh.
I bet that was, I mean, some of the best times of your life right there.
Well,
right?
And Freeze, he may get mad for saying this if he ever hears it, but I left Liberty to go to UCF with Gus. You know, my family lives in Orlando. Orlando's kind of home to me, and I kind of knew Gus from we weren't like friends. I think everyone thought when I went to work there, because I say we bonded or whatever, but like I was close to him there. They're like, oh, this is like your guy. Man, my third time meeting Coach Malzahn was at UCF. Now I talked to Christy a bunch, which Christy helped me get the job, because as Gus told me when I got to UCF, like, you know, I kind of only hired you because my wife
told me to.
You on Instagram and stuff. So, like, that's kind of far as I got you. But Gus had a guy, Brett Whiteside, who was great for a long time, who, when they got let go at Auburn, went to Missouri. So I knew he needed a, you know, chief staff, whatever, ops guy. And so I was hitting him up. I was hitting up, again, for better or for worse, every coach that I have worked with outside of ULM and ORU has been a Jimmy Sexton client. You know, it was Chad, Sam, Freeze, and then Gus. So I'm texting Jimmy, like, can you get me with Gus? Like, I know it's your guy. Like, you know. And so I went to tell Coach Freeze at Liberty as a coach, I think I'm going to get off the job at UCF. I'm going to move to Orlando. Man, it's not a you thing. I love – it was actually a pay cut that the money Liberty pays. I said, man, my family's there. It's a great career opportunity for me. I can kind of do some more things. I want to get into fundraising and you know, be an AD. I have to get them all the spiel. And Coach Freeze says, do you not like to golf? I said, sir, you'll never play golf working for Coach Malzahn. You'll be working all the time. I mean, we have a great setup here. You must. I said, Coach, I love golf. I love you. But, like, I can't base my career on it. He's like, oh, I guess you're not going to. If you're going to UCF, you'll never play golf. So, and he went wrong. We worked with Gus a lot more than we did at Liberty. I mean, you know, the hours were longer. So
was that your impersonation of Hugh Freeze right there?
Oh, that was him. That was direct, man. Do you not even like golf? Oh, my gosh.
In Orlando, there are tons of places you can go play.
And I liked it when I could, but he was not wrong. It was less. Now, I will say,
but I know Gus likes to play.
And I played with Gus more than I play with you. I really would, because Gus would be good about, like, he wouldn't play in it, but it'd be, you know, 5 o'clock on whatever day, and like, let's go play some golf. So I would play with Gus more, but Gus works. He was a grinder.
Hello, this is Justin Akre. When joint pain or an injury slows you down, turn to UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Arkansas's largest orthopedic team and the state's most fellowship-trained surgeons offer expert care for sports injuries and problems affecting the hip, knee, shoulder, spine, hand, foot, ankle, and more. Care is easy to access at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital and the new location on Rodney Parham in Little Rock next to UAMS Health Urology Center. For walk-in care, choose UAMS Ortho now. Call 501-686-TOSH. When you think ortho, think UAMS.
Welcome back to From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. UAMS Ortho Now, open at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. If you have an orthopedic injury, sports, work, or anything else, go in and see the best in orthopedic care. No appointment is needed. Ortho Now, open Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, and Saturday, 8 to noon. Located at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. We'll finish part two of my sit-down with Sean S.J. Tuohy in our next episode. I hope you enjoyed part one. Part two gets even better. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon from the Shortgrass.
You have been listening to From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network in association with Majestic Cubby Productions.